You're tuned in. Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by the one and only Paul Dottino, I am John Schmelk. 1 hour of Giants talk with you at 201-939-4513.
Only an hour, John.
We will continue our preview of the season. We have a guest to cover the New Orleans Saints. He'll be joining us in a couple of minutes. Hello to the folks following us live on Twitter. Hope you're having a great day as we get closer to the end of June into July, which, of course, the end of July means the start of Giants training camp. But, Paul, we'll get to the Saints in a second. But the big NFL story today is, of course, the passing of Buddy Ryan,
yeah.
Who really the system doesn't really work the way it used to. But in its day,
no. It
was really super creative and super effective, the 46 defense. And he is one of the most brilliant defensive minds the game of football has seen.
Mm-hmm.
And an innovator, an interesting character, to say the least.
Oh,
he has
yeah.
produced two sons that are also interesting characters. and Buddy Ryan's a guy who was a great coach, a good football mind, not loved by everybody.
No.
That's for sure. But respected by everybody for the type of football man that he was.
You know what's interesting, John? Earlier today, I had put up an RIP message regarding both Buddy Ryan and Pat Summitt. And
Pat Summitt, the longtime coach of the Tennessee Volunteers women's basketball team.
Yes.
Right.
Who both passed on over the evening.
Right.
And a gentleman fired back to me on Twitter. All of a sudden, now we say nice things about this guy. You know, don't you know who Buddy was? Something along the lines, don't you know who Buddy Ryan was? It doesn't matter if you like the guy or not. You must respect what he brought to the table.
Right.
And that's the most important part about this. I know a lot of people in the NFL who did not like Buddy Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
Who?
There were people in this building that did not like Buddy Ryan.
Okay. Whether it be his cantankerous attitude.
Right.
Whether it be the bounty gate that the Eagles of his day were
yep.
involved in. Whether it be the almost violent, vicious-like, hoodlum-like Chicago Bears defense that he was involved in.
How about the incident with Kevin Gilbride on the sidelines? I mean, forget it.
Kevin and him got into a nasty deal in Houston. So, you know, there are plenty of reasons not to like what he did or what he personified as a person. I totally understand that. But don't for one second disrespect his football mind,
right. mm-hmm.
his brilliance,
yep.
and his ability to, for whatever you wanted to say about him as a person, his ability to get his players to play for him. Because much like a lot of Giants players in the 80s did not like Bill Parcells, okay, they will swear by him to this day that he was the best coach they ever had, and he's the reason that they won championships.
And he made them better.
Without
and you know
question.
What? If you had a chance to ask Buddy Ryan now, would you be okay if everybody that you coach against didn't like you? He'd be like, of course I don't want them to like me. I was trying to beat their you-know-what in. He'd be fine with it.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's funny, and this goes to the point you kind of just made. I think these days, whenever somebody passes on and you're talking about the overall legacy of somebody, you always end up having two sides to every story. And this happened when Muhammad Ali passed away.
Sure.
Where everyone only wants to focus on the bad, and some people only want to focus on the good. It's okay to look at a person's life in totality and say, you know what? They did some great things. They did some things they didn't like. But the impact of their life, whether on football or Muhammad Ali's case, on sports, on boxing, and in the culture in general, has a profound impact.
Yeah.
And you have to respect what that person does, good and bad. Nobody's perfect. Nobody's a saint. And nobody is, you know, well, I shouldn't say nobody, but, you know, generally, you don't want to, it's not usually all bad either. Usually you have a balance. And, you know, Buddy Ryan did great things on the field. He was a cantankerous character. He wasn't liked for some of the things that he did. But like you said, his impact on the game was profound, and nobody would deny that. You go down through history, Paul, you got Tom Landry, you have Buddy Ryan, you have Bill Belichick. I mean, those are like three of the biggest defensive minds in NFL history that changed the way people looked at the game and how they played it.
You know, I will say this. I remember in 85 when the Bears and their 46 defense just rolled over the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
Oh, ugly. And they rolled over a lot of teams that year, by the way.
Yeah. Not the Giants, though, in the playoffs. Giants gave them a good one.
They did.
Giants gave them a good one, but the Bears won, and of course, they got the Lombardi Trophy. But I remember the big deal that was made out of the fact that the players, for the first time ever in anyone's memory, carried off their defensive coordinator as they left the field.
Yeah.
It wasn't just Ditka. Buddy Ryan got carried off on the shoulders of those players at the end of that game as well. And that was significant because it was a sign of respect and appreciation that the players had for him. And, you know, that was the kind of the earth-shattering. It was a big story. It was like, wow, Buddy Ryan got carried off the field. You don't really need to say anything else to justify what he brought to the game.
All right, everybody, thank you for joining us live on Twitter. If you want to watch the rest of the show, go to Giants.com right now, where we'll continue our preview of the Giants' opponents this season. Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings, fantasy sports, free to play. And now we're joined by the Saints sideline reporter for WWL, Christian Garrick. He joins us on the line right now on Giants.com. Christian, you got John Schmoke and Paul Dottino here in East Rutherford, New Jersey. How you doing today?
John and Paul, how are you? I'm great, and I got a great affinity for New York. I've spent a few years up there at West Point when my dad was stationed up there, and my sister actually lives in Suffern, New York. So hopefully she's listening right now. I need some bagels, some New York bagels,
hey.
Tara, my sister, so send them on down.
They don't make them right anywhere else, and it's funny you say that. Bob Papa, who does our games play-by-play on the radio, his son just entered West Point a couple days ago, and he's going through his first year there. So interesting connection. All right, Christian, let's start with the Saints here. It seems like they've been through almost a try to rebuild on the run type of process since that last Super Bowl. They've been down. They've struggled to, you know, stay above 500. Do they think that this process is going to finally yield some results this year and they're going to, you know, get over that edge and not be 7-9, 8-8, maybe try to get to 10 wins?
And understanding, Christian, they play the Giants in week 2 of the regular season on September 18th, so it's going to be an early test for them as well as the Giants to see what they have.
Yeah, and we remember that shootout game that they had last year, right? That 52-49, that was no defense whatsoever in that ball game, and it was a magnificent ball game between two great quarterbacks. That's really all there was to show for it, but yeah, I mean, look, to answer your first question about do they feel like there's going to be results, yeah, I'm sure internally, if you ask them, they're going to be as confident as ever. Every team is this time of year because they haven't been on a three-game losing skid. So, hope springs eternal for every team across the National Football League this time of year. Now, I would tell you, realistically, from the fan base, and I think those that are close to the team and the media, you know, they would argue that you're still 7-9 until you prove otherwise. And you know, this team was atrociously bad on defense. I know the Giants had a bad defense last year as well, but this team was really just an awful train wreck of a defense a year ago. And, you know, until they get improvements there, they won't even sniff 8 wins or 9 wins. And in particular, you know, I think that because of the schedule and the way it's laid out this year, they could actually be a better team than a year ago, but still end up with the same or worse record just because of how difficult this schedule is for the Saints.
Well, let's start with the defense because it has been such a sore spot, Christian. Let's just say that they get some of their guys who they are hopeful of doing well, actually do well. Who are the two or three new additions on defense that you think can actually elevate this defense several notches in the rankings?
Well, I guess I don't really have confidence in any of the new additions that would just elevate them several notches. But if I think a player that's going to make a little bit of a difference, and we'll see just how much, just because, you know, I'm only skeptical because, look, whenever you get cut by another team, it usually means either money or you're getting up there in age or both. But it's James Laurinaitis, the middle linebacker. They brought him in this offseason, and he's an extremely durable player, really, really smart. And, you know, he's drawn a lot of comparisons to when Jonathan Vilma was here in terms of his ability, his football IQ, and to be able to check the defense in and out of the right plays. And they moved Stephon Anthony over from the middle linebacker position last year as a rookie. They moved him over to the weak side linebacker spot. I'm sorry, the strong side linebacker spot. And, you know, I think he's going to benefit from James Laurinaitis being here, kind of understanding how to prepare and work as a pro. And not to mention, you know, James Laurinaitis knows this system that Dennis Allen is going to run. It's similar to that of which he ran in St. Louis under Greg Williams for the past couple of years. And James Laurinaitis is a tremendous individual in terms of his character and his football IQ. You just have to wonder, does he still have does he still have the football it, if you will, being able to make some plays out there at his age? And I know he's been in the league 7 years and he hasn't missed a game, and that speaks to his durability. I just wonder, at some point, father time is unbeaten, and eventually it takes its toll on you.
Sure.
And I just wonder if he's going to be able to contribute at a pretty high level. Now, another player that it's not a newcomer, but this is a player that absolutely has to work out for this team, and it's Jarris Byrd, the safety. I mean, if you go back and look at it, and I wrote about it the other day, they handed him a $54 million contract two off seasons ago. His first year, he played in 4 games, missed 12. Last year, he appeared in 13 games and started 12. He has 3 turnovers in his 2 seasons as a Saint, 2 forced fumbles and 1 interception. Prior to landing in New Orleans, and I think 5 years prior to at Buffalo, he had 22 turnovers and 22 interceptions, I should say. So
right.
That's
wow.
A dramatic drop off and a tremendous amount of money that you're paying a player that you hoped was going to solve your turnover woes. All the while, you let a guy like Malcolm Jenkins out your building, and you let Roman Harper out your building, which you brought back. But I just think this is an absolute make or break year for Jarris Byrd. We posed it to our audience the other day on our radio show, and he was the unequivocal guy that everybody pointed to in terms of the money, and in terms of the hype that was coming in as the player that absolutely has to start paying some dividends for this team.
Christian Garrick, sideline reporter for WWL, covers the Saints down in New Orleans. And you mentioned the safety position. They've invested in it. I mean, they got the first-round pick in Kenny Vaccaro, the big free agent in Byrd. They bring back Roman Harper, Von Bell draft pick this year.
Yeah.
But great safeties are awesome to have, but they don't do you much good if your corners can't cover anybody outside. What's the situation with the Saints' corners? Do you think they're finally going to have some guys out there that can actually cover somebody? Because I'll be honest, look at the depth chart. The names don't inspire a ton of confidence.
No, and I think you're right if you're looking at it. Now, I don't put a lot of stock in what you see in OTAs and mini camps because they're running around in pajamas, all right?
Right.
But
mm-hmm.
let me just add this. Keenan Lewis last year was injured for a good portion of the year, and he tried to gut through several injuries, and he's coming off a hip injury. And at this point in his career, you know, you're 6, 7 years, 8 years in, you start dealing with hip injuries, man, that could be hard to recover from. But
yep.
If Keenan Lewis is healthy, if he's healthy playing like he was 2 seasons ago, then I feel much better about it with the addition of Delvin Bro. Delvin Bro, I think, is going to be one of these corners that ends up making a significant name for himself and maybe even a Pro Bowl berth at some point in his career in the next year or two. He's that kind of good. I mean, he's got that kind of ability. This is a player that once was committed to LSU out of high school, ended up breaking his neck, took the long route, junior college ball, and then onto the CFL. And, I mean, you know, so it's a tremendous story, but he's got ability. Now, the other corners are Damian Swan, who suffered 3 concussions a year ago as a 5th-round draft pick out of Georgia, and it showed some promise.
Boy.
He made some plays at times, but again, when you start talking about 3 concussions, man, the 4th one might be the last one you'll ever sustain before you decide to step away from the game.
Yeah, you would not want to continue after a 4th, that's for sure.
Yeah, and then they also have P.J. Williams, who, again, I say this with a lot of caution, has looked pretty solid in OTAs, and that's P.J. Williams, the 3rd-round draft pick of a year ago, not this past draft, but the one before, and a 2015 class, and he's looked decent. Last year, he spent the entire year on injured reserve with a toe injury and a hamstring injury, kind of a redshirt year, if you will, for P.J. Williams. But, yeah, you're right. Outside of those two starters and Delvin Bro and then Keenan Lewis, they don't have a whole lot of depth that is proven. They lost Kyle Wilson, who – I know Jets fans might be familiar with up there because he was a first-round draft pick of the Jets a few years ago, and they lost him just a couple of last week to a season-ending injury. So, yeah, that's where the concern is. There's depth deficiencies there at the cornerback position. But another player that I want to talk about is Eric Harris. He's a safety now. They got him out of the CFL. They kind of had a tie with Delvin Bro and Eric Harris. And that's a player that's going to surprise, I think, for a roster spot and some playing time this year on the Saints roster. And I'm not saying he's pushing Jarris Byrd. I'm not saying he's going to be a starter. But I'm saying that I wouldn't be surprised in certain sub-packages that you see him on the field for the Saints defense.
Christian, before we turn it to offense, because obviously there's a lot we want to talk about there, one more defensive question. This draft was very strong on defensive line, specifically on the interior, and the Saints wound up taking Sheldon Rankins number one. What do they expect to get out of him as a rookie?
Yeah, he's going to be a three-down player. He can stop the run. He could also get after the passer. I think they're expecting him to be able to push that pocket to allow some of the edge defenders, which they lack outside of Cameron Jordan. They don't have a complimentary guy. They lost one in Kikaha this offseason to a knee injury. But I think they're expecting Sheldon Rankins to be able to play on all three downs in the sub-packages, yeah, in the base, stop the run. And this is a guy that just haven't seen him in college. I watched him pretty closely at the Senior Bowl, and he is he's a terror to block.
Yeah.
He's a nightmare inside.
He is.
And if he gets his pass rush going along with a complimentary couple of moves, and this is a guy that's low, short built to the ground, hard to move around, and he's lightning quick. I mean, for a guy that he's barrel-chested, he's kind of just built to play the D-line position these days in the NFL. You want to be smaller, I think, in the NFL to play the interior because how quick you can be, and also you can kind of anchor to the ground. But I think they're expecting some pretty big things, and just everything that I've seen of Sheldon Rankins and everybody I've talked to in the organization, they feel like they've got a player that's going to be around for, you know, 8 to 10 years. And whether he's going to be the next Warren Sapp or Aaron Donald, I don't know that you can definitively draw that. But man, if you have an 8 or 10 year career and putting up, you know, sure, 5 or 6 sacks from the interior, you're doing pretty well for yourself.
Christian Garrick, WWL Radio Saints sideline reporter. Let's go to offense here. And I think it's interesting the way they've kind of set this offense up, Christian. They have, you know, obviously Drew Brees, a veteran that's been around for a long time. But looking at his weapons, you have a lot of youth. I mean, Brandon Cooks is still a young guy going into his third year. You know, Willie Snead, Brandon Coleman, Michael Thomas, the rookie. I mean, they have a lot of guys here without a ton of experience. They do have Colby Fleener, the veteran they brought in the offseason. How explosive can this offense be with the weapons that they have out there for Drew Brees? Or is it going to be a bit of a learning process to start the season?
No, I don't think it will be a learning process, honestly, because I think, you know who stems the learning curve? It's number 9. I mean, he ultimately makes that a little easier to – I'm being honest. You know, I'm not trying to sit here and say, oh, Drew is so great. He's just the best ever. And that's not what I'm saying. But he certainly softens that blow and makes it easier by his ability, a lot like Eli would. But
absolutely.
I actually think that what they've done is – they tried to reassimilate the 2011 offense where they were just lighting teams on fire. I mean, just throwing up monster points. And I think that that's what they want to kind of recreate, if you will. Now, Colby Fleener's not going to be Jimmy Graham. Let's get that out of your mind. Let's get that clear right away. He's not going to be Jimmy Graham. However, the addition of Michael Thomas, if you go back and look at this Saints offense, when they struggled last year, and they were a top-5 offense, but where they struggled – was in the red zone. Drew Brees was completing less than 50% of his passes inside the red zone because
wow,
he didn't have the big threat down low. He didn't have that guy that he could throw it up in the corner of the end zone and know that his guy was going to get it. Colby Fleener gives him that option along with Michael Thomas, the second-round draft pick out of Ohio State. Look, again, this is OTAs and minicamps, and I know we don't want to read too much into it, but one thing that you can tell about OTAs is for the skill position players, mm-hmm, you can tell if the guy can run and the guy can catch and he has and he understands body positioning, et cetera, and Michael Thomas understands that. He's been a frequent target of Drew Brees aerials this offseason, and I'm anxious to see how they assimilate him and how quickly he can get involved in this offense. But I think this offense still has a chance to be explosive in their usual self because of the trigger man, but in particular also the guy that's calling the plays. The big question to me is, are they going to be able to run the ball? And their questions are on the offensive line, in particular at left guard, where I still expect them to bring in a veteran at some point before training camp.
You know what's funny, Christian? We were just talking the other day to the Philadelphia Eagles reporter who covers the Eagles. Same thing with the Redskins the other day. And what is it about these teams? Everybody's got a quarterback who can throw for over 4,000 yards and probably 35 touchdowns. But Where is the offensive line with their run blocking? Where is the consistency in the running game? These are things that directly affect a red zone offense. You just talked about the red zone attack not being as good as it needs to be. It seems like this is like an epidemic around the NFL. You've got these high-powered, powerful offenses that can't consistently run the ball.
Well, I think some of that has to do with, and just talking to personnel guys around the league and scouts, et cetera, and they feel like it's an epidemic that goes down to college football because so many teams are running the spread in college football. Some of these offensive linemen are not being developed enough, not being developed quickly enough. So in order for them to get to the NFL, it might take them 2 or 3 years to develop. And I think that's a big part of this is that they're not focusing. I mean, come on, look at the run. The spread, the spread principles, and look at the running game in terms of what they're asked to do. It's far different from what they're asked to do in an NFL offense, and I think it takes them some time. And I think the NFL running game has been hurt by it. And then subsequently the passing game, we've seen these astronomical numbers from quarterbacks over the last, handful of years. But, yeah, I mean, and what's interesting here is that you go back and look at the last couple of Super Bowl champions, even though it was the New England Patriots mixed in there between Seattle and the Denver Broncos, and two out of those three teams could really, really run the football and make you pay in the red zone. And New England, albeit as good as they were Super Bowl champions, and they were really efficient in the red zone. They might have had their warts offensively at times during that Super Bowl season, but they would make you pay. And I think that's where that's what separates teams in the red zone and in ball games in general, is being able to salt away a victory when you're going your 4-minute offense. Everybody in the stadium knows you're going to run the football, and you say, who cares? We're going to run it over here, and I dare you to stop us because we're better than you. And the Saints haven't been able to do that in a while.
Is there any chance that Ingram can be more of a power back? I mean, he's had a lot of injuries in his young career. Is there a chance that they could lean on him and he could somewhat provide that balance?
Yeah, we've been asking this question for a couple of years down here, and it's to be continued every year, it seems like. And I just think that Mark Ingram is the type of back that he is, which is a solid NFL back, but he's never going to be, a superstar running back. He does some nice things. I said this the other day, and I caught some flack for it, but there's really nothing, and I'm not trying to diminish or admonish Mark Ingram at all, but there's really nothing special about him. He's just good. Does that make sense? I mean, there's nothing that you look at him and go, hey, yeah, like there's some unique ability. Like when Darren Sproles was here, it was like, my goodness. I mean, he's just disgusting.
Yeah.
But Mark Ingram, you watch him and you go, all right, yeah, I mean, he can certainly play. He's going to get you some yards. He's going to be effective. But he's not a game breaker. He doesn't have tremendous speed. He doesn't have tremendous power.
You know, Christian, you mentioned the offensive line and their run blocking. You have some good names on an offensive line now. Teron Armstead was a high draft pick. He's at left tackle. Max Unger, the veteran acquisition. Zach Streif has played tackle in this league for a long time. Andres Pete was a high draft pick last year. And then you mentioned the left guard. You think you might bring somebody in new. But it seems like they put a pretty decent pass-blocking line in front of Drew Brees to give him some time this year.
Yeah, they have. But at the same time, the last couple of years, let's not forget Drew Brees suffered a plantar fasciitis injury last year, also a shoulder injury because he took a number of hits, a number of big shots.
Yeah.
Opposed to when the Saints were really rolling offensively, 09, 10, and 11, and then a little bit in 2013, you look at the common denominator there is they had two big old guards in the middle of that offense, all right? And I'm talking about Jari Evans and Carl Nix for three of those 4 years that I rattled off. And,
yep.
And when he needs to be able to step up and climb the pocket because he's smaller in stature, that's the kind of protection he needs. And then when he doesn't have that, and that's where the issue becomes. That's why I continue to say Senio Calamete at left guard along with Tim Alito, those two guys have been rotating and competing at that left guard spot. Andres Pete is actually going to play right guard, I think, for the Saints this year, kicking in from the tackle position. It's a situation where you go, man, Tim Alito has had seemingly 2 or 3 years to lock down that position. Senio Calamete has had a couple of years. And neither one of them haven't been able to seize the opportunity, and that might be the weak link at left guard. Teron Armstead is going to be an all-pro left tackle. I mean, they paid him as such this offseason. He's going to be a really, really good player. Just to put in perspective how good and how athletic Teron Armstead is, one of the guys on the Saints coaching staff told me his rookie year, if he wanted to, he could be a Pro Bowl tight end. I mean, that's how athletic he is.
Oh, man.
So, wow. I mean, like, honestly, he's that good. And I don't want to sit here and gush over an offensive lineman, but we all know, man, if you have a left tackle that can lock everybody down, he basically played one last year almost every game on one leg, and I think he gave up two sacks. He was injured for a good portion of the year, and I think he got credited with giving up two sacks. That's not bad for a guy that's playing on one wheel.
Sure, sure. All right, one final question out of me. Giants play the Saints in week two. Combined touchdown passes for Eli and Drew Brees. Over or under 10?
I'm going over. Give me the over all day with Eli and Drew. I mean, those guys can swing it. Plus, I mean, isn't Steve Spagnuolo still the defensive coordinator up there in New York?
Oh, Steve is still here. He's got some new parts, by the way.
I know. Look, I like what the Giants have done on the defensive side of the football. Olivier Vernon and Eli Apple. I'm not taking a shot at Steve Spagnuolo. Actually, you know, and down here in New Orleans when he was here, he was incredibly gracious with the media and incredibly gracious with us. I just think it didn't work out. But because of the two defensive woes of a year ago, I think that's hard to fix in one off season. So I just think that the offense is going to be lighting up MetLife on both sides of the football come week two.
Christian, final one. And you mentioned the schedule, so I took a glance at what the Saints have. They have a six-game stretch here between October 16th and November 17th that, oh, my goodness, there's one game in there that they, you know, it's a little easier. But listen to this. October 16th, home versus Carolina, to Kansas City, then home versus Seattle, at San Francisco, which is the game you think they might be able to have a good chance of winning. Then they host the Broncos. Then they go to the Carolina Panthers. I'll tell you what, your offense better be clicking during that period, Christian, because you got – five of the best defenses of football in that stretch. Holy cow, they did not give you guys any breaks in the middle of that schedule.
Yeah, the only good thing about this schedule, and this is from a selfish standpoint as a sideline reporter, is I don't have to worry about cold weather games. I mean, I'm going to New York in September. I know it can get cold up there.
Nah.
But typically you're
September.
Catching a break when you go in September.
Yeah.
But, yeah, going back, you look at that home game against Denver and then that Thursday night against Carolina. So you're playing the Super Bowl champions and the NFC champions in a matter of 5 days.
Wow.
So that's a brutal stretch. You'll find out just how good or bad this Saints defense is, or this Saints team is in general, in that six-game stretch there.
Great stuff, man.
Thanks so much. And we'll catch up with you week two, my friend. Enjoy your next month of peace before the chaos begins in August.
Yes, indeed. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Christian.
Christian Garrick. Covers the Saints, sideline reporter, does a good job down there in New Orleans. But, Paul, Panthers,
it's nasty.
At Chiefs, home versus Seahawks, at 49ers, home versus the Broncos, then the short week on the road at Carolina on a Thursday.
The only small positive out of the schedule for them is that cluster isn't in the latter third of the season where you're already beaten up, broken down, and tired, and now you're in no position to compete.
Well, let me look at it this way, too. Their final six games, and you know Drew Brees, much better in good conditions, especially in domes, okay? The final six games, November 27th, home versus the Rams, dome. Home versus the Lions, dome.
Mm-hmm.
At Tampa, you're in Florida. At Arizona, dome. Home versus Bucks, dome. At Falcons, dome. So they have a lot of good condition games their final month of football.
Drew Brees, you can win as many games as you want. Week two, you're coming here to play the Giants at MetLife Stadium.
Also going to be good weather, though.
It is good weather, but I don't think any of our viewers right now care about any other game except week two. They want the Giants to win that game because,
of course,
you never know. That could wind up being a tie-breaking scenario for a wild
card. I'll tell you what.
You never know.
They might not see one game of bad weather the whole year.
Yeah.
The Saints might not see one game. I'm not even talking about bad weather. I'm talking about reasonably uncomfortable. They might not have an under 70-degree game the whole year.
Can I
How about that?
Right now, week two, I want to reserve 80 degrees in sun.
Oh, you don't want that.
I do.
No, you want to shut down the Saints' passing attack. You want wind. You want Drew Brees' arm to become an issue in the windy Meadowlands. You want it to be sloppy. That's going to help you.
It's not necessary.
Oh, Paul.
It's not necessary.
Your love for good weather is
my love for good weather
good
and our fans
sense.
That are going to sit in that stadium in week two and enjoy themselves.
Well, they'll enjoy themselves if the team wins. And you have a better chance of winning because in bad wind, this Eli will cut the wind better than Drew Brees will.
I don't think they need the win to help them beat the Saints. Let's go.
A little overconfidence. From
phone calls.
That's downright cocky. 201-939-4513. Let's get to you. Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings. If you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy sports. Pick your contest, pick your players. If you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. DraftKings.com, promo code CONTACT. That'll get you to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports free to play. Full lines. Rick, Florida, lead us off. You've been holding the longest. Thanks for being patient, Rick. What's up?
Good afternoon, John and Paul.
Hi, Rick.
Can you guys hear me?
Loud and clear, sir.
This would be Vic.
Okay, yes, Vic. One question I have.
Go ahead.
Are you guys okay? All right. We all know that we need a key component on the offensive line, okay? And that's the right tackle, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
Did the Giants do anything or attempted to even talk to Eugene Monroe for a position on the line?
All right, understand something, Vic. There are rules in place where you can't talk to a player as long as he is under contract with another club. Now, at the time when Monroe was being bandied about in trade talk, the only thing you can do as a team is you can talk to that team and say, listen, we'd like to make a deal for a player. Do we have your permission to then talk to the player and the agent if we want to do some type of renegotiation or extension to see if we can follow through on the trade?
And there were,
that's all you can do.
And there were reports that something like that might have happened. We can't confirm that actually did happen or not.
Right. Okay. The other thing I'd like to ask Paul, the center that we got from Canada, is he still with us?
Brett Jones is still with the Giants. He was running a lot of second-team snaps with the offense. However, I will tell you that McDermott, the free agent that they picked up from the Miami Hurricanes, was also getting a lot of offensive reps with the second team. So I do think that Jones is in the mix to be the backup center, but McDermott's going to try to make a run at him in training camp.
And you have Geddes, too, who will play some center as well.
Geddes took some snaps also with, like, the third team.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I got one more question for Paul, and this is old-time football. Okay?
Old-time, all right.
Ernie Corey was the fullback for the New York Giants back in the 60s.
Part of the Baby Bulls.
What else did he do besides running back?
He punted.
You got it, buddy. You guys, I can't fool you. Okay, thank you very much for taking my call. Have a good day, and love you both.
Thank you, Vic. We haven't heard from Vic in a while. It's good to hear from Vic.
He's a good guy. I'm so happy that he's able to check in with us as often as he does. I wanted to refer to a couple of tweets.
Back to the 60s on that, man.
It's my wheelhouse, you know.
So back in the 60s, that was what, your 15th year covering the team?
I want to get to a couple of these.
Go ahead.
Louis Christiantello says, Mark Bavaro despised Buddy Ryan. He is the only player I have ever heard say that in an interview. You know, the thing about Buddy was, again, because of some of his tactics and because of some of the players on his teams that certainly pushed the envelope or crossed the line, there were a number of people around this league who did dislike him.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie about it. It's true. And so, you know, I can't remember. I think you're right. I think I remember Mark saying that, but I'm not going to say for sure. So I don't want to put that out as a fact. But there was one other comment here by, hey, it's Don, who wanted to know if I gave him credit for mentioning the tweet about Buddy Ryan. He was the one who had said to me, let's not get all lovey-dovey over the guy, because there were some negatives to be said too.
Well, and there's his credit.
I've done it.
There you go.
Okay.
201-939-4513. Patrick's down in Carolina. Pat, what's up?
Hey, guys.
What's
How are you doing today?
Doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing fine. I want to start this off with a premise and kind of piggyback on the last caller.
Sure.
And talk about your guys' favorite subject by now, the offensive line. But I want to start this off with the premise of you put your five best guys on the field at once, right?
Absolutely.
So when Eric Flowers was drafted, we had BD at left tackle, and everybody projected, most of the pros who evaluate these things said, Flowers is a right tackle, right?
Go ahead. That was
the consensus with him coming out of college, and then eventually he might be worked into left tackle. Mm-hmm. Now, we've had two or three guys come in for tryouts. We've had two or three guys over the offseason be rumored to be coming to the Giants potentially who came in for visits. I don't understand the reluctance to move Flowers to the right side, other than I understand the concept of trying to build from the left side to the right side. So maybe you might be able to shed some light on that.
Well, Patrick, look, we don't know exactly what the conversations were and what the thinking is, but I think the assumption would be, and I think this is, I don't think I'm going on a limb here, if the Giants decide that Ereck Flowers needs to stay at left tackle, depending on who they bring in, I imagine it's the front office and probably the coach's mutual opinion that Flowers is a better left tackle than whomever they want to bring in. And they're not going to move Flowers, a guy they're trying to develop into that position long term, back to the right side just to satisfy a player's need or demand because they believe Flowers is a better player on the left side right now.
Well, I understand their belief, but when we're looking at Marshall on the right side, I got to believe any upgrade there is going to solidify the offensive line as a whole.
All right. I think one other thing you have to keep in mind, and the players themselves along the line have discussed this, continuity is something that you'd love to be able to utilize as you look to improve your line, if at all possible. The Giants like that left-sided gate of Flowers, Pugh, and then Richburg in the middle. They want to be able to say that's going to be intact for the next 5-6 years and maybe even longer than that. They'd love to be able to say that. Look, it's a luxury when you have a David Deal type who can literally bounce anywhere you need him and help you get your five best on the field. That's a luxury. You don't always have that. And quite frankly, that's not the best case scenario. You don't want to be bouncing guys around if you don't have to. Sometimes, what do they tell you? Necessity is the avenue toward invention or creation. Quite frankly, if it comes down to it, and the Giants get into training camp, and they finally decide, you know what, we just can't live with this situation, then they will move somebody. But this is still the offseason, and so in their thinking, best-case scenario is the left side stays intact. We're going to keep them that way. At some point, if they just can't swallow it, they'll make a move.
I like Flowers. I mean, I believe that he's a mauler type that we all would like on the right-hand side, so I like him better as a right tackle than a left. Now, I'm no pro by any means, but I believe that when you look at your prototypical right tackle with a mean streak, and that's
right,
definitely what Flowers had coming out of Florida,
yeah,
definitely what we need on that right side.
He's much more like Kareem McKenzie was, and that's your prototypical right tackle. I had someone say to me last week, and I'm not joking, this is a guy in the NFL, he's a personnel guy. He said to me, have the Giants considered actually flopping Jerry and Newhouse to the left side since they're better pass protectors than they are run blockers and gone strong side with Pugh at right guard and Flowers at right tackle?
See, I don't think in the NFL these days you have that separation as much anymore. I think you need your right tackle and your left tackle to both be able to protect against the pass because, you know, you're looking at Von Miller. He's coming off that left side. J.J. Watt comes off that left side from time to time. I don't think you have those defined roles as much as you used to where, oh, you want the left side to pass block, you want the right side to run block. I don't think that's the way a lot of teams look at it anymore, to be honest with you.
I do agree that it's less defined than it used to be, but I still do think there is a definition there. But here's the reason.
That's fair.
But here's the reason you don't do it,
mm-hmm,
okay? Because even if Newhouse and Jerry are better at pass blocking and you put them on the left side, I'm not trying to make fun of anybody. But if Marshall Newhouse is playing left tackle, chances are he's not going to be as good, even in pass pro, as big physical Ereck Flowers is. Even with all of his rawness and mistakes and his rough ankle last year. Therefore, your franchise quarterback is in jeopardy.
Hey, Patrick, in the bottom line, and I'll leave you with this. Ereck Flowers will be the one that determines whether or not this was a good strategy this year. Can Flowers take that next step in his second year, take that big jump that players often do going into their second season and become a good starting left tackle, a Pro Bowl caliber left tackle? Can he make that step? That's the only thing, really, that's going to determine whether or not this approach was the right one.
All right, well, I'll leave you guys with this. I like Eric Flowers. I like his mean streak. I like everything about him. I just think that there's got to be some kind of balance along the line. But I thank you for your guys' opinions, and I'll listen off air.
Hey, look, Patrick, and we know exactly what you're saying. We're not telling you you're wrong. We're just telling you what the perspective is of the organization.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call, my friend.
And remember, time and training camp performance can possibly change decisions and player deployment. Nothing is in stone.
But then again, you know, Marshall Newhouse did hold down that job for pretty much the whole year next year. So someone else is going to have to step in and take it. They're not just going to say, Marshall Newhouse, you're not starting a right tackle anymore. No, it's going to be, all right, this guy played so well, he earned the starting right tackle spot. And someone's going to have to step up and do it, whether it's Bobby Hart or whomever on this roster. Somebody's going to have to take that job from him. It's not just going to be taken away.
Final thought, very simple. Eli Manning has had two of the best years of his career throwing the football.
Right.
And they have had Jerry and Newhouse playing the right side.
Correct.
So they clearly have an ability to give you something. Something that's allowed your franchise quarterback to put up pinball kind of numbers.
It's good enough.
So that's good.
Yeah.
Do you want it to be better? Do you want it to be more well-rounded? Yeah. Sure you
do. Absolutely.
But sometimes you can't get it. And then the other thing is, and I've said this 100 times on the show, Will Johnson, Pittsburgh Steelers, blocking tight end, that will help that side of the line.
And a great pass protector in Rashad Jennings can help that too, as can Shane Vereen, who's good in pass protection. Christian Trenton, he's down in New Jersey in the state capitol. Christian, what's going on?
What's up, Paulie? How you doing, John?
Hi. How are you, Christian?
Good. Good afternoon. All right. Real quick thing to say. Top 100 list. Big Ben, 21, played a few games last year. Andy Dalton, again ahead of Eli, and Phillip Rivers. Now, we have three quarterbacks ahead of Eli Manning that I don't think that are better than Eli. I do think Big Ben is right there with him, but definitely not better. Another thing, Ben McAdoo, this was a subject a while ago. Why he really hasn't been mentioned a lot on the show is I honestly think that the Giants organization and the fans do have confidence in him, as in this is not that much of a – I mean, you cannot replace a legendary Tom Coughlin. It's very hard to do that. But I think that there is a lot of confidence from the fans and from the organization that Ben McAdoo will do very good in as being a head coach in his system.
I agree. Look, and Christian, I mean, the Giants wouldn't hire Ben McAdoo if they didn't have confidence in him. And I think the reason I think people feel real good about it is because he's not installing new systems on offense and defense. So while the leadership might change and the voice might change, they're not going to be doing things on the field that are much different than what they did the last couple of years. And I think that's why you had that comfort level and your confidence. As he said, it's evolution, not a revolution. And I think that's the thing he said most all offseason.
We've heard that
a lot.
It's
true. And I think that's why there's confidence, because I think people believe there is going to be a continuation of what they did before.
That is true. And one thing with the offensive line. Now, let's just say, God forbid, Newhouse gets hurt. Is the backup, let's just say, whoever comes in for him, is he really that much of a downgrade?
Bobby Hart would probably be the next guy up at right tackle.
Right, so would that really be that much of a downgrade if everybody's kicking so much dirt on Marshall Newhouse? I don't really see that being that big of a deal.
Well, you have a couple of issues.
Okay, everybody wants balance, and yes, running the ball is especially the biggest thing, especially the reason why Eli is probably, if not the best play-action quarterback in the league. So running the ball would help that way, but Eli's had his best two seasons the last 2 years, so how can you say these guys are as bad as they say that the offensive line is as bad as they say everybody says they are when he's had his best two passing seasons in his career last year?
Listen, the only thing I would add to you is that this. The Giants have clearly been a pass-heavy offense the last several years. You know, that's not the ideal way to be a contender.
And Ben McAdoo has said a million times this offseason he wants to run the ball more.
So,
right.
So you know, you always want to plan to be the best. You want to plan to be as good as you can be. You never want to go into a season saying, you know what, there are areas of the playbook that we just don't think we can do very well. You never want to do that because you're handicapping yourself as an offense. Yep. So, yes, the Giants' offense has produced a tremendous amount of yardage and points these last couple of years. No one's going to deny that. But do you want to just put those kinds of numbers up and continue to struggle to be a contender? Or do you want to find a way to enhance this offense to where you can be a contender again and find a full range of plays that you can run at any time? I mean, that's the deal.
There's always room for improvement.
Now, three quick questions. I'm going to get off the air. What do you think about the top 100 list about what I said?
You're right. No, you're right. What? There's nothing else to say.
Well,
you're right.
Look, I think you can make the argument that Roethlisberger could be ahead of Eli. I don't think there's any argument for Andy Dalton being ahead
of Eli. Not based on last year.
And I don't think Phillip Rivers should be ahead of him either. If you're just basing it on last year, no, he should not.
The list is a 2016 list based on what happened last year. They do that every year.
How many games did Roethlisberger play last year?
Oh, golly.
Like seven?
I was going to say half the season.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
So he can't
be
ahead of him.
No, that's fair. Absolutely.
But Le'Veon Bell was also ahead of Eli Manning, too. I mean, I know they're not the same. They don't play the same position, but he was hurt the whole year too.
Here's what you have to remember. Here's what you have to remember, and I appreciate your thoughts, but Eli is always going to get slammed by that anti-New York bias. Okay?
Yeah, but this is our peers voting for him now. That's terrible.
And that happens there too. Let me tell you something. Eli Manning, 5 years after he walks off the field for the last time, is going to Canton, and that's all you need to say.
Roethlisberger played 12 games last year.
Did he play that many?
He played 12.
Was it 12?
He didn't have a good year, though. He threw 21 touchdowns and threw 16 interceptions.
And some of those 12 I know were partials.
You could be right. Yeah, look.
And anyway, you don't have to defend Eli, especially not to me.
Right.
Thank you.
And another thing about the
real quick,
Christian. What is just going on with Dizzy Thomas? I'll let you guys go. Thank you for taking my call.
Last time we heard from Coach McAdoo was a lower leg injury and that he was not only taking minicamp off, but they were going to rest him until training camp.
Yeah, Le'Veon Bell played just six games. See, I don't think players are voting, though, based on last year's stats. I think
they're supposed to be.
Well, yeah,
that's what the NFL Network poll is, but I think that
they're not.
I think it's very skewed.
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, I think that look, all these things are popularity contests. It's all reputation-based. You know that.
Yeah. Anyway.
All this stuff. 201-939-4513. We got three more calls on the line. We got 10 minutes. Let's get all three in before we say goodbye. Joe in Pennsylvania, he's up next. Joe, how are you?
Hey, great. Great to talk to you. This should be at least a two-hour show. I have to definitely give my respects to Buddy Ryan. I mean, he was something to watch, really, to him. I remember Dick on the sideline losing it with Flutie, and I forget that one college coach. I forget his name. The guy was running down the sideline. He used to flip out. He hit him. You know who I'm talking about. You probably remember. But, Buddy Ryan, you got to give a respect there. We won the Super Bowl that 1 year, or was it twice? And we didn't win the division. That definitely the one. The Eagles won the division, you know, and we won the Super Bowl. Am I correct there on that?
Yeah, 2007, the Eagles won the division, and the Giants won the Super Bowl. That's correct.
Right, you got to get. I hope Jimmy Johnson can show up there. Remember with the body bag things and that, it was hilarious, you know. Okay, that's my respects to him. Going on with the, you know, talking with the tackles, I don't think you change it unless something really gets bad, you know, during the year where it's obvious that that's really hurting us and costing us games. I don't think you mess around with that. And the guy from Baltimore, the tackle, I don't know if he would, that they said was available possibly. I don't know if he would be better than Beedy or not either. I don't know how that is. And one other thing quick there, your interview with the Saints guys, they were talking about they needed safeties. It bummed me off. They left that one go to the Eagles, and he's a Pro Bowl player, but I guess they couldn't sign him. Thanks again. Great show, guys.
Thanks, Joe.
And thank you.
You know, that's true. Out of all the turnover the Saints have had, Malcolm Jenkins is the guy they decide to let leave.
Yeah.
I mean, he's probably been their best defensive player in the last decade.
I agree. That did not make a ton of sense.
It did not. You know, it's funny. I was curious. Because, you know, a lot of times production is a product of your schedule. And then last year the Giants played a lot of, quite frankly, terrible defenses. It's just how the schedule worked out. They had a lot of the worst defenses in the league on their schedule. Mostly because a lot of the defenses in the NFC East weren't very good, and they got to play the Saints and things like that. It's just the nature of the beast.
Yes.
This year, they get the Saints again. The division defenses aren't that great once again. The Vikings have an excellent defense. The Ravens defense isn't what it used to be. The Packers defense is eh. Bengals defense is excellent. Browns, enough said. Steelers are all right. Again, you don't have, I mean, you're not rolling out like, you know, the Saints are rolling out against the Seahawks and the Chiefs and the Panthers. You don't have those teams on this Giants schedule this year. The offense should be able to do some damage.
You know,
that's my point.
Yeah, but you still want to see more balance.
Of course you do. No
you
argument.
Know, John, I'm going to tell you flat out, I'm not very comfortable watching Eli throw the ball 45 times a game.
Well, it also puts him in harm's way 45 times
that
a game.
That it does. That it does.
201-939-4513. Mark is in the second city, Chicago. How are you, Mark?
Hey, I'm doing well, guys. How are you doing?
Thanks for calling in, Mark. What do you got for us?
Well, I want to echo some of the sentiments about Buddy Ryan. You know, living out here, I got to see that team every week of the year, and that was one ferocious defense they had.
Sure.
Unbelievable. So as much as you like or hate Buddy Ryan, you did put together a heck of a team out
yep,
here.
Yep, absolutely.
So anyway, I'm going to direct my questions to Paul, as the historian emeritus of the Giants.
Okay.
I'd like you to go in the Wayback Machine and sort of compare McAdoo as a coach from what we know right now and the Giants as a team, and compare that to when Parcells came in, who was a first-time coach. Fossil, I think, was a first-time coach. And just sort of say, you know, where, you know, the truth will be borne out at the end of the year, but, you know, where do you think the Giants are on both of those accounts? And, you know, Parcells was not, the great coach after 1 year. He almost got run out of town. So
yeah.
I'm trying to figure out, do we have a Ray Hanley or a Bill Arnsparger here, or do we have a Parcells?
All right. And, a couple of things.
One other question, and I'll wait for your answer here.
Sure. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. He wants you to answer,
okay.
then he'll follow up.
The one thing that I really, really like about Coach McAdoo, and I had a chance to sit down and have a conversation with him, a one-on-one conversation. And in that conversation, it was very clear to me that he is not, and I repeat, N-O-T, he is not your typical high-profile coordinator who gets promoted to head coach and thinks he knows everything and says, I got this. I've been waiting for my chance. I've studied under all these guys. I got this. I'm cool. That is not Ben McAdoo, and I think that's significant. Because this is a guy who understands that he is a rookie head coach and that he is learning on the job and that there's a lot of stuff, and I mean a lot of stuff, that he does not know, that he has not experienced, and that he's got to kind of figure out as he goes along. I love the fact that he's willing to admit that. And there are coaches who I've known who have not just around here but in other places who fail miserably. Because they think when they get that promotion that it was their right, it was a natural progression, they deserve what they got, and they know it all when they step into it.
Yeah.
And they don't.
And, Mark, I want to jump on the second part of your question. You asked about what position the team is in as compared to when these previous coaches took over. And in that way, I think this is very unique because oftentimes you'll get a change of coach because there was no quarterback in place to allow the prior coach to win consistently. You know, when Parcells took mm-hmm. over, you didn't know what Phil Simms was yet. When Jim Fossil took over, the Giants quarterback situation was certainly in flux. You know, Tom Coughlin got Eli Manning at the beginning of his career.
Right.
But again, you were at the end of Kerry Collins at that point. It's very different when you come in as a head coach and you have Eli Manning sitting there waiting for you. It makes your job a lot easier. So I think that mm-hmm. from that perspective, from a team standpoint, a roster construction standpoint, I think McAdoo's in a different situation than pretty much a lot of these other Giant coaches were in the past.
And that's a great point. The franchise quarterback is already in place.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks. Second question, and I'll take your answer off the air. A few weeks back, they had the most games played as a Giant. And just for the younger people on the line, would you comment on Greg Larson and Joe Morrison? Joe Morrison was one of my favorite players. The guy wasn't a tremendously talented athlete, but he was a football player.
Yes.
And he played 13 years. So, anyway, just to give some guys some interest about the legacy of this organization, I'd like to hear your comments on those.
Joe
Thanks.
Morrison, number 40, had his number retired.
Thank you, Mark.
He went through the early 70s and the Tittle years, played into the early 60s from the Tittle years into the early 70s, played running back, wide receiver, multiple positions. Very versatile, very smart, and as you said, he was a football player. Not a great athlete, John, but he did everything you wanted him to do, and he was extremely tough and extremely smart. Many a times got the living crap beat out of him and kept coming back for more. He wasn't overly physical, gifted, or anything of that nature, John.
How about Larson?
Larson, and by the way, Morrison went on to coach at South Carolina, and then some years later passed away of a heart attack prematurely. But very intelligent man. Very respected, too. He's one of Wellington Mara's favorites while he was here. Greg Larson was an offensive lineman who played, again, in the early 60s and then into the mid-60s, into the early 70s. He was a guy who played some guard and played some center. He was a Pro Bowl caliber center for several seasons. Bit undersized, more of a technician than he was of a bruiser or a big, hulking, physical, dominant kind of player. But a technician, very smart, and somebody who very, very durable. They loved the fact that they could count on him every single week. It seemed like you couldn't do enough to beat on this guy, and he kept getting up. That was a Giants team that, as you know, that part in the late 60s wasn't so great. And they were constantly outmanned, John. Constantly outmanned. And he was in the middle of it. And God bless him. You know, Greg Larson, his brother played for the Minnesota Vikings, part of the great Vikings teams. No, seriously.
Can we take a timeout from Paul Dottino's personal Giants Chronicles episode?
Sorry. Look, he opened up the encyclopedia.
Not your fault. I know. All right, final call of the show. I haven't heard from this
Gary,
guy.
Gary, by the way, Gary was the defensive lineman on the Vikings. Gary Larson.
I haven't heard from this guy in a long time, and I hope this means that the hatchet has been buried between Stephen Washington, D.C., and Paul Dottino.
Stop. No hatchet. Good afternoon.
What's going on? How you doing?
Hi, Steve.
How's everything? Listen, long time. Everything's good, man. No hatchet here. We all grown. We move on.
Okay, excellent.
It's all about blue.
Yes, sir.
All right. Listen, I got a – first of all, I have a question. And I just want to know, man, I want you to feel free to ramble on as long as you like about it, but give me 1 second, at least ask one more before you let
go
me
ahead.
Go.
You got
and
it.
And I want to offer – first, I want to give you my opinion, and then I'll tell them with a question. Number one, I just want to be on record that just saying – I'm just scratching my head as we continue to push Flowers and try to make him be our left tackle. I feel like he's, you know, he could be a Pro Bowl right tackle this year, but we want to force him to be the left. So I'm mad about it, and I'm going to continue to be mad about it until we get, you know, what I think could be a Pro Bowl right tackle. Because I feel like we could get an okay right tackle somewhere along the line, but we got a Pro Bowler right there standing at the left tackle position for whatever reason. Here's what I want to ask you guys. Is it more about us being cheap, meaning we don't want to pay somebody left tackle money, or is it more about the so-called development and chemistry? Go ahead, please. Entertain me with that. I'm really thinking it's more about money than anything at this point.
Steve, I don't think it's about money. The NFLPA site has a daily salary cap list that is up on the site.
Right. I mean, the Giants have plenty of cap space, according to that site.
And according to that site, money is not an issue because it's there. I don't believe it's a money issue. I think it's a philosophical issue that in a perfect world, they'd like to keep the left side of the line intact. And until such time where they think they're pushed into a corner and they got to make a change, I don't think they're going to do it.
Okay. Well.
Your response,
Steve. I have mulled this over many times, you know, and I just don't understand this. But I'm gonna accept it, you know. I'm just gonna have to accept it like all the
Steve,
other
Steve,
let fans.
Me let me just say this to you, and I'm not trying to be funny. I do believe that, as McAdoo has said, the story's yet to be written. I do believe the radar is still out. I still think that there is a possibility, and I'm gonna hold true to this, that there's a plan in place and that they still think they're gonna get somebody from the outside to at least compete, if not win that right tackle spot by the time week one comes around against Dallas. If that happens, then all of this consternation and all of this stress that all the fans and we have been talking about for months will all go away in the wash.
And, Steve, I'll say this.
You know what I mean?
And, Steve, I'll say this. There's a chance when all is said and done that you're right. I mean,
that could be too.
There's a chance that you're right, but it's going to be Flowers that determines whether or not you're right, and we'll have to wait and see. I think unless what Paul says happens, and they do bring somebody in late on a cut or something like that, which is possible, who knows? It looks like this is what they're going to do, and we're going to see how Flowers does on the left side, and we're going to see if it works out.
Is that more of a GM decision, or is that a coach's decision on who, you know, whether we actually need to address where Flowers is playing, the left or right at this point? Is that more on the coaches or the GM? I mean, I know it's collaborative at the end of the day, but do you think that's something that the coach initiates? Hey, you know,
It's kind of a joint thing, Steve, because the coaches have to decide, okay, who's on the roster, where do they best fit, but the GM's got to decide who's going to be on the roster.
Right.
So it is collaborative in some regards. Here's what does happen, though, and this is not unique to any organization. The GM, when he's talking to his personnel guys and they're saying, okay, we decide we want this guy or we decide we want that guy or we don't want that guy, they will talk to the coaches and say, look, if we bring this guy in, what are you planning to do with him?
And in the same way, you get to a game day, Ben McAdoo wants to play a certain player at a certain spot. Jerry Reese isn't going to call down and say, no, play him here.
No, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
That may happen in some places.
Everybody was hoping Monroe, I'm over the dude, man. I wanted him for first, but I'm looking at his Twitter page. He just can't stop talking about weed. I told him, I went ahead and tweeted him. I said, man, listen, there's a time and a place for that, man. Sit down, get your money, and stay focused. I don't know, young man, please stay focused.
Paul, you hear me?
Steve, let me tell you,
Paul DeTito has wanted to say that on the air himself for like 3 weeks, and you just took the words right out of his mouth, so you just made him a very happy camper.
Steve, I'm a football guy.
It's too much. I mean, not because of weed, but because he's so focused on it. I'm like, man, you're not thinking about football. All you think about is weed. I can't do weed.
The only thing that's worse than my Twitter page, because I'm following Eugene Monroe, the only thing that's worse than having him blow up my page with conversations about weed is all the stuff about Game of Thrones. Please, no more Game of Thrones.
Steve,
no. Ray Donovan is on Sundays. Okay? Ray Donovan is on.
Steve. Steve, I really enjoyed this phone call. Now, don't be a stranger, okay?
Okay, let me get one thing in, and I'll listen up here. First of all, I just want to say one thing, and I'm going to ask a quick question. Olivia Vernon, you got to act like you're going to be here for an extended amount of time. Stop talking about the weather. Every time I see this dude, every single time, I don't care if he's in Miami or in Miami, but every single time he's talking about the weather, every time he opens his mouth, every clip I've seen him, he's running by. I'm that scared of him. And he's also, and I'm really concerned, he's always talking in the present. Right now, today, this and the other, like he's not sold on being, you know, a giant for a long time. I'm watching you. I'm listening to you. Bro, get here. Put your mind here. You here. We paying you a lot of money, man.
Steve,
we need you to be
Steve,
in New York.
It's been a great call. I've enjoyed it immensely.
You're funny.
Okay. All right, talk to me about Nasser, man. I think he has value. Will we play him? That's it. That's all right. I got.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it. Well, first of all, I want to see how Werner reacts when it snows in early December. See if he likes that. He's driving around on ice.
Steve, I will just say one thing to you about Olivier Vernon. He has come here with great respect for the Giants' history, their tradition, and what it means to be a Giant. I sense a very, very strong feeling about that, and I would not worry about him.
Remember, he's asked about that stuff. He's saying that in response to questions.
And he's got to answer.
Right. Yes.
You know?
He's a nice guy.
But yeah, I would not worry about his focus or his – and by the way, let me just throw this in. I know we're running over time. When he was – going into free agency, okay?
You're killing Matt here, Paul.
There were three people. Three people he talked to that sold him on, I really need to seriously talk about the Giants. Antrell Roll,
yep.
John Beeson,
yep.
JPP.
Yep. All Florida guys.
You need to know that.
All
Florida guys who told him, you need to play with the Giants. Just saying.
And then Nassib, I mean – look, I think he is what you think he is. I mean, he's right now a good backup quarterback. I don't know if he's done enough to prove that he's a good starting quarterback in the league simply because he hasn't had the opportunity. He very well could be, but I don't think we know until he goes up against number one defenses in real game situations. I mean, it's just hard to tell, you know?
Agreed.
All right. Everyone, great job. You got some bonus time. You had the Tino history lesson. You had Steve in D.C., that's a hell of a show. And, of course, you had Christian Garrick on the Saints. So.
Tomorrow, Minnesota Vikings.
Yes. Do you have anybody lined up for that yet?
Not as of yet.
Okay. We're working on it.
I have somebody, but he hasn't gotten back to me.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Enjoy your day.